This is Henry Simon, bringing you another story from my files here at the Missing Persons Bureau.
In these stories of the Missing Persons Bureau, dramatized for Henry Simon by Ross Napier, names and addresses have, for obvious reasons, been changed. In one moment, the search for Ernst von Bruckner. Address unknown. Here again is Henry Simon.
The two men walked slowly up the garden path. Their carriage was erect, and they looked neither to the left nor to the right, their footsteps echoing in dull unison upon the sun-scorched concrete. At another time, in another place, the severity of their tread might have seemed comic. But the time was 11:10 a.m. on the 7th of March, 1944, and the place was number 38 Eisenstrasse, Berlin. Both were tall and clad alike in the black uniform of Hitler's elite guard, the SS. At the front door, they paused momentarily. The younger of the two, and obviously the superior, glanced uncertainly at his companion. And then, without a word, he reached for the brass knocker and let it fall heavily.
Kein Lebenszeichen. Vielleicht ist er nicht zu Hause.
Das vordere Fenster ist offen. Klopfen Sie etwas lauter.
Es ist Sonntagmorgen. Er könnte zur Kirche gegangen sein.
Verdammter alter Trottel. Da könnte er wirklich sein. Das sollte den Halunken erwecken.
Well, the door was opened at length, and they were confronted by a third man, capitalist but also in uniform, the uniform of a high-ranking military officer. He greeted them with a weary smile, raising his hand only slightly in acknowledgement of their stiff-armed salutes. Signaling his subordinate remain outside, the young SS man entered the house in the wake of his host, closing the door behind him.
Wir werden uns im Wohnzimmer unterhalten.
Sie wünschen, Herr General.
Kann ich Ihnen ein Getränk anbieten?
Nein, danke. Dies ist kein gesellschaftlicher Besuch.
Das habe ich auch nicht gedacht.
It would be wiser, I think, if we spoke in English. Sturmbannführer Wolf has large ears. But his education is sadly lacking.
I always prefer to converse in English whenever possible. It is an inspiring tongue, and generally a lot safer than our own.
Particularly in the proximity of such worthies as the good Wolf.
You are here in your official capacity, I take it?
My duty is a most painful one, Herr General. Reichsführer has ordered that you be placed under immediate arrest.
So, it has come at last. I have been expecting such an order since my recall from the front in December.
You have spoken publicly against the Führer, Herr General. To say the least, it was an extremely foolish thing to do.
I did no more than I felt was my duty. The Führer is in no condition, mentally or physically, to sustain command of both the army and the state. I hold him totally responsible for Germany's present chaotic situation. We cannot win this war, Ernst. That has been apparent for the past 18 months, apparent to all but the Führer himself. The Führer and the blundering idiot Ribbentrop.
This is not news to me, Herr General. I, too, realize our position is hopeless. But I am careful not to say so in the presence of others.
You are the wise one, Ernst. I always said so to Marlene.
Not wise, merely cautious.
Tell me, why did they send you? Of all people, why you, my good friend?
It was Kaltenbrunner's idea. As you know, he despises us both intensely. This is his way of hitting back at me for the times I've bested him. Reichsführer was in agreement, though for other, less personal reasons.
Dear Heinrich, he was always a thoughtful fellow.
Needless to say, I accepted the mission without protest, in the hope that I might be of some service to you.
It is a little late for that.
Not so late as you might imagine. You have an hour, Herr General, in which time you may do as you please.
You are suggesting that I take my own life?
I'm suggesting you do as you think best.
And the alternative to killing myself?
If you come with me, you will be put on trial before the People's Court under the jurisdiction of the esteemed President Freisler, which means the firing squad for certain, that or hanging. If you resort to suicide, you will merely be saving the state the trouble of executing you.
So?
In a fast car, you could be out of Berlin in an hour. Your chance of ultimate escape would be slim. But a slim chance is better than none at all.
You would risk the consequences for me?
For you and the memory of Marlene. Gladly.
There is a possibility you will face the firing squad in my stead. You realize that?
A faint possibility, perhaps no more. As you know, I am not without influence. My explanation will be a convincing one. I extend you the privilege of retiring to your room with your service pistol. You betray my trust by running out on me. There will be no difficulty. You have simply to leave by the back entrance. You will find a car there waiting for you. Wolf is posted at the front door, so you'll have no interference from him.
And the roadblock?
The order for your arrest is not official. You will be allowed to pass through as you please.
I do not know what to say, Ernst.
The least said, the better, I think.
You are a true friend. I will not forget this.
The stipulation I must make is that you do forget it. If you are taken, I would not like it to become known that I deliberately fostered your escape. It would not go well for me, or for you either.
Have no fears. The truth will never be extracted from me.
Your assurance is all I need, Herr General. Please go now. Time is of the essence.
We will meet again, perhaps.
I think not. But one never knows.
I will live on in the hope of one day repaying your kindness. Good luck, Ernst.
And to you, Herr General. May God be with us both.
It was in the spring of 1952, some 8 years later, that this story was first told to me by one of the two men concerned, Wilhelm Ludwig Brandt, formerly a general in the German army. He had, it transpired, managed to escape from Berlin and had made for Lubmin, not very far from the Russian border. His subsequent capture by advancing Soviet forces was followed by a 5-year prison sentence, which he duly served in a Russian detention camp, later making his way back to the West and finally to England, where his brother had settled some 12 months before. His arrival in London gave rise to certain publicity in the newspapers. The details of his military career were brought to light, more to his advantage not, however, for he served his country as a soldier, not as a Nazi. And although he had belonged to the National Socialist Party, his membership had been a mere formality. Now, at the age of 64, he was a free man, at liberty to do exactly as he chose. At liberty, in fact, to visit me, here in my office at the Missing Persons Bureau.
So you see, Mr. Simon, these past years have not been easy for me. At my age, it is difficult to begin again, to start afresh in a new life.
Yes, I can well understand that.
It has been suggested that the German army will be reformed in the near future under Western supervision, and that my services may be required, but this is something only the future can decide. For the present, I am concerned solely in catching up with Ernst von Brückner, the man to whom I owe everything, including my life.
He's still alive?
I cannot say for sure, but there is no official record of his death.
Was he tried as a war criminal?
No charge was made against him, despite the fact that he was a group leader in the SS. So far as I can ascertain, he was arrested by the Americans in June 1945 and later released. What became of him after that is not known.
And you want us to trace him, eh?
I feel he may have been less fortunate than I, in which case I may be able to help him.
Less fortunate financially, you mean?
In any way I can.
You knew him well?
If my daughter had lived, he would have been my son-in-law. They had just announced their engagement when she was killed in an air raid.
When was this?
June 1943. They had been keeping company since 1940.
From what you tell me, he appears to have been fairly highly regarded in the SS.
He had a good brain. His superiors exploited it, although he himself was never popular with them.
His superiors included many high-ranking Nazis, did they not?
They did. Not the least of them being Himmler and Kaltenbrunner. At the same time, I would hasten to point out that Ernst was no more than a cog in a very large wheel. Like so many others, he was for many years unaware of what was going on about him.
And when he found out, what did he do?
There was nothing he could do but play out his part. Unlike myself, he was cautious enough not to place his head in a noose.
He was an active member of the party?
Mr. Simon, we were all active members of the party. We were Germans, and the party controlled Germany. It was necessary, therefore, to concede its authority and highly dangerous to do otherwise. Not to join the party was to defy it, and to defy it was suicide.
What age would von Bruckner be now if he's still alive?
Somewhere between 40 and 45.
Did he have any family?
Not that I know of. His parents were dead, and I seem to recall his telling me once he was an only child.
Any close friends?
It is difficult to say. As I mentioned, he was not popular with his SS comrades and superiors.
And there's no one at all that you can think of who might be able to supply us with some sort of lead?
I am sorry, no.
Did your daughter have any sort of friend or friends she might have introduced him to during the courtship?
Well, there was Gretchen.
Gretchen?
Gretchen Feldberg. She and Marlene went to school together. They were very close.
Marlene being your daughter?
Yes.
And what became of her? And Miss Feldberg? Any idea?
No. The last time I saw her was perhaps a year before Marlene's death. But she was Frau Feldberg, not Fräulein. She was married.
To whom?
Major Karl Feldberg. He was a Staffel commander in the Luftwaffe. A fine fellow. But it is difficult for me to tell you much about any of them, even Marlene, with any degree of certainty. I spent most of 1942 and a good part of 43 away from Berlin. My visits there were brief. That is, until I was finally recalled in December. Then, in the March of the following year, came the order for my arrest.
So you actually saw very little of your daughter in the year or so preceding her death?
Very little. On the occasions I did see her, she was usually in the company of Ernst.
I see. And they both worked in Berlin?
Most of the time, yes. Marlene was a nurse. She was attached to the central hospital.
What was von Bruckner's occupation, by the way, before the war?
He was an architect, also a qualified lawyer.
A strange combination. Which of those two professions did he follow?
Architecture in the main. Although I understand he acted as a legal advisor to certain people. He also possessed an economics degree.
A very learned young man, it would seem.
Too learned for his own good, perhaps. His academic qualifications won him rapid advancement in the SS.
Architecture, law, economics. I take it there was nothing else.
And not to my knowledge, no.
Well, I think I have all the essential details on this card now. Ernst von Bruckner, address unknown.
Henry Simon returns to continue this story in just a moment. And here again is Henry Simon.
Find a former officer of Hitler's SS, last heard of 7 years before. In itself, this was not an easy assignment to take in one stride. For in Western eyes, to have served with the SS, let alone to have held some sort of authority in this organization, was a black mark against any German. However, it was not for us to consider the pros and the cons in this direction, nor to condemn a man against whom no sort of official charge had been made. We were therefore obliged to accept the case, and following upon Brandt's departure, I sent for Agent Bob Hunter, with whom I discussed its various aspects. Now, Hunter, It seems to me that the only person who might be able to tell us something about this, if she's still alive, of course, is this Gretchen Feldberg, the friend of his fiancée's. But there again, of course, we've no way at all of tracing her, except possibly through her husband, who was a major in Luftwaffe, the name of Karl Feldberg.
Yeah, I guess he'd be our best bet, then. Military intelligence boys probably have something on him. At the same time, I can check up on von Bruckner's record and see if Brandt's got his facts straight.
Good idea. I'll give Major Thomas a ring. Tell him to expect you.
Good. I'll get over there right away.
Well, there you have it, Hunter. Von Bruckner, or more correctly, former Gruppenführer Ernst von Bruckner, was released from custody by the Americans in March 1946, following an intensive but fruitless investigation into his SS activities. Nothing was brought out against him. No charges were made.
He was given a clean bill of health, huh?
Absolutely.
You got no further record of him?
I'm afraid not.
What about this Luftwaffe guy, Major Felberg?
Prisoner of war. Fished out of the channel by a corvette, May 44.
Is he still alive?
That I couldn't say. He certainly survived the war, though. The details of his record and release from the prison camp are all here.
And he went back to Germany?
Presumably. There's an address listed, if you're interested.
Oh, his home address?
That's what it says. But these particulars were recorded some time ago, don't forget. The chances are they don't apply now.
Even so, they're worth checking. Is it a Berlin address?
Hanover, 32 Holzmindenstrasse, Mangan.
Accordingly, the following day, Hunter flew to Hanover, arriving in that city shortly before 3 in the afternoon. From the airport, he traveled by cab, bypassing the city to Holzmindenstrasse in the outlying suburb of Meringen. There appeared to have been very little or no bomb damage in the area, and number 32 was intact, one of a row of ancient but neatly kept dwellings which was adjoining the local shopping center. In answer to the agent's ring, the front door was opened by an elderly, white-haired man with a lined face and a faintly humped back. In belabored English, he introduced himself as Franz Felberg, father of the former Luftwaffe pilot, who, he explained, was now living in Frankfurt, where he was employed as the manager of a soft drink and cordial plant.
Yeah, he is doing very clever for himself since the war. He is a hard worker.
Yeah, he's married, isn't he?
Yeah, to Gretchen. Fine girl. They have two small boys.
Well, actually, it's her I want to talk to. She had a friend, Marlena Brandt.
Marlena?
Yeah.
Yeah, good friend. Very good friend. Is the daughter of General Brandt.
It was the daughter. I understand she's dead now.
Ah, it's very sad. She is killed in the war when the hospital where she works is bombed. Very sad.
Your son's address in Frankfurt. I'll just make a note of it.
It's 15 Mühlhausenstraße, Eberswalde.
At Hanover's Hauptbahnhof, Hunter boarded a train for Frankfurt, some 200 miles southwest, where he spent the night at a hotel, proceeding early the following morning by bus to Eberswalden on the outskirts of the city, and thence on foot to Mühlhausenstrasse, a moderately fashionable residential district which had clearly undergone a great deal of reconstruction since the war. At number 15, a modern red-roofed bungalow, he was received by a blonde woman in a yellow blouse and green tight-fitting slacks. This was Gretchen Felberg, who duly informed him in faultless English that she was alone in the house, her children being at school and her husband at work.
It is getting so I see very little of my family, with girls so busy and the boys growing up. Still, I have nothing to complain about. They've been very happy here.
You've certainly got a nice place. But harking back to the point of my visit, Marlena Brandt, you and she were kind of special friends, eh?
We'd known each other since we were children. Her death came as a great shock to me.
You were in Berlin yourself at the time, I believe.
While my husband was away, I worked there for 3 years.
Did you see much of her?
We met for dinner or coffee 2 or 3 times a week.
Well, our fiancé, Ernst von Brückner, did you ever meet him?
Many times. He was a fine type. I liked him very much.
Well, now the jackpot question. Do you have any idea where he might be now?
Oh, no. No, none at all. After Marlene's death, we lost touch. I would not even know if he's still alive.
Well, is anybody you can think of who might know?
There was his doctor friend.
Doctor friend?
Every week they played tennis together at Kirkminster. Once or twice, Marlene and I went along to watch them.
Well, what was his name, do you happen to recall?
Rudolf someone. Fleischmann, was it? No, Fleischmann. Dr. Rudolf Fleischmann. He was attached to the SS Medical Corps.
Later that same morning, the phone on my desk rang, and I lifted the receiver to be told that Hunter was calling me from Frankfurt. Briefly, he reported his progress, instructing me to check back with Major Thomas, this time in connection with Dr. Fleischmann. Accordingly, after ringing off, I phoned Thomas, who duly consulted his files, again with a positive result.
Fleischmann, Rudolf Hans, surgeon, SS Medical Corps.
Yes, that'll be the fellow.
Same story again. Killed by the Americans. No charges laid. Released April 46.
A month after von Brückner. Anything else?
Before the war, he had a practice in Braunschweig. Admitted to the SS May 1940.
Braunschweig? Well, perhaps he's gone back there.
It's a possibility. But unfortunately, I can't confirm it one way or the other. He ceased to interest us when the Yanks let him go. From there in, he was on his own.
On receipt of this information back in Frankfurt, Hunter was quick to act and duly traveled to Braunschweig, a few miles from the dividing line between East and West Germany. There, through a contact in the city council, he procured a medical register which listed the names and addresses of all doctors practicing in and around the city. Fleischmann's name was among them, and within the hour, he'd succeeded in tracing the doctor to his home in the nearby village of Berstadt. Tall and fair, with heavy Nordic features, Rudolf Hans Fleischmann spoke fluent English.
That is so, Herr Hunter. Ernst and I were both officers in the SS, though we were attached to different departments. However, it is not something either of us would wish to boast of.
Well, at least you came out with a clean sheet, which is more than can be said of a good many of your associates. You were taken prisoner by the Americans and later released. What then?
I returned to Braunschweig and subsequently resumed practice here.
And von Brückner?
Well, for many years I heard nothing from him. I knew he had been released, but I had no idea what his plans were or where he had gone.
Yeah.
And then one morning, about 2 years ago, a little more perhaps, there was a knock on the door. I opened it, and there he was.
Mm.
For a moment, I didn't recognize him. He looked very ill and much older than I would have thought possible. We talked for a while, and he told me he was in partnership with a fellow architect. However, he had not been well for some time, and his wife had insisted that...
Wife?
Oh, yes, 12 months before he had married the sister of his business partner.
Ah.
Well, as I was saying, she had insisted that he undergo a thorough medical examination.
So he came to you, huh?
He had been intending to contact me anyway, so he said. We had much to talk over.
What was the result of the examination?
His heart was in bad shape. He had never been what you would call a strong man, and the strain of the war years had had a curious effect on him.
Huh?
Well, he was in Berlin almost to the end. He witnessed the slaughter, the devastation of the city, of the people. He couldn't get it out of his mind. It was almost as if he blamed himself for the whole thing, as if he had suddenly awakened from a bad dream and found it was all true, and that he had brought it about. Believe me, Mr. Hunter, I have suffered severe pangs of guilt myself, but nothing to be compared with what Ernst was suffering. It had become a fixation with him, a sort of madness. However, I told him to take things quietly and get as much rest as he could. Whether or not he followed that advice, I do not know. I've never heard from him since.
And you made no effort to contact him?
Well, I did write about 3 months later, but my letters went unanswered.
Well, where did you write to?
His home in Cologne.
You happen to recall the address?
Not offhand, but it will be in my notebook. If you will excuse me a moment, I will get it for you.
The address was 17 Lingenstrasse in the suburb of Staubehofen, some 5 miles from Cologne's busy city center. A solid stone building, fronted by a narrow strip of lawn, it was situated between a block of 4 flats on one side and a children's playground on the other.
Yeah.
Oh, good afternoon. You speak English at all?
Yeah, a little.
My name's Hunter. I'm from London, the Missing Persons Bureau.
Missing person?
Yeah. Does the name Ernst von Brückner mean anything to you?
I am Frau von Brückner.
Well, his wife?
I was his wife.
Was?
Ernst is dead. He died almost 2 years ago.
The tone of her voice was flat. She made no attempt to elaborate. Just stood quite motionless in the doorway, her eyes devoid of luster, her expression dull and lifeless.
Oh, forgive me, I didn't realize.
One day he was alive and well. The next he was gone.
Oh, sudden as that, huh?
No, not sudden. The sickness had been with him for years.
You mean his heart?
The doctors blamed his heart.
Something else?
Something much worse, Herr Hunter. His conscience.
Well, I don't quite follow.
The explanation is a simple one. He died of shame.
Henry Simon returns to conclude this story in just a moment. And here again is Henry Simon.
It will never be known for sure whether Ernst von Bruckner's acute sense of guilt stemmed from some hidden act of violence or cruelty committed by him during his term in the SS, or simply from the fact that he'd been part of the instrument which had wrought such terrible havoc and tragedy upon tens of millions of people the world over. In view of the evidence to support it, I'm inclined rather in favor of the latter theory myself. Aren't you? And now, this is Henry Simon, as always, inviting you to meet me here again, and for the present, bidding you au revoir.